Blog Talk Radio.
Sonic FX. You've found us on October 4th, the, 277th day of the year. Yes, brethren, this only leaves us with 88 days left in 2015. Just sort of shortens I will take Louie off again. I'm just Brother Armstrong, your music is always welcome in its time and place. Thank you. But as I was saying, we're on the we only have 88 days left in the year. It seems like it was not that long ago that we were beginning 2015 and with all of the optimism that the new year brings. We have an interesting program today. I wanted to talk a bit more about the perceptions and the role. And I don't think if I did this for another 1,000 years that we would cover all of the facets of Freemasonry. Trying to stay away from this being purely ego-driven, I always try to bring in references. I believe very sincerely, as you are well aware, that Freemasonry has appeal to. And this is the interesting part. The question is always: do we start off with men of principle, or does it bring those features out? I think it's the appetite. You really do need to have an appetite for this banquet of intellectual focus. And that isn't suitable to one and all. I don't know if there's a smugness. If you're sitting down and we're eating a meal of Chateaubriand at the next table there are vegans and worse, it doesn't really give us we can feel smug or we can just enjoy what's in front of us because we happen to enjoy that type of food. So it's not a competition. It is what it is. Some people feel that there's great value in them living a principled life. Some, I think, plumb the depths of their religions to discover for the revelations. But religion, of course, comes with a canonical. Laws unlike Freemasonry. The challenge it presents is more daunting in a way because it allows and it works and expects freedom of thought. You're always expected to make decisions day by day. In other words, you're in this relationship because you want to be. So there are many ways of being a good Mason. The undefined part is what is success? A good Mason, you answer for yourself. Is it compliance? Is it that competition where you have the sense that you want to accomplish a great many things before you die? Well, that's quite common here in North America and other places of the world, where there is that competition for collecting experiences. Not that I, it's a bit puzzling. Doesn't in and of itself, it's fairly benign. But to what end? Always to what end? Does it make somebody smarter? Does it make somebody have? Does it demonstrate a stronger commitment, or is it defining of a sense of adventure? Well, there are many ways to do that beside this notion of competing. And it's not necessarily that people travel and do different things specific, as famously now we're talking about the ignominious bucket list. It's the way it's presented. Some of the most interesting people allow you to discover what they've been doing, as if it's they weren't doing it for bragging rights. They were doing it because of the opportunities that presented themselves willingly and unwillingly over the course of their life. And we can always, I think, choose who we prefer to marvel. And I think it's pretty clear. Wonder if I could edit a sneeze out of the program. Before I do that, though, I'll edit another few pounds off my waistline. Well, thank you for joining me today. It's an age thing. You start to sneeze and you just don't stop. There's a lot of things about growing older that I think are remarkable and wonderful. You have more choices, and it's great. The aging process is a state of mind. It's a state of mind. You can be. If you give up, you grow old. If you become complacent, the world starts to seem to move past you. And it doesn't. We're all moving on this sphere. We're sitting here. Our rumps are fully planted on a sphere that's whirling around at, what, 56,000 kilometers an hour? So if I get all pouty and decide that, I don't understand things, or I love the rotary phone and all this just nonsense, it makes me seem foolish. I preferred a three-speed standard on the column 1956 Chevy transmission. Oh, I hate these new modern power brakes. Much better when you didn't have power brakes and you had to pump them. And of course, that was a connection with the creator. Every time you slammed the brakes on, there was a good chance that the 2 tons of Detroit steel were not going to stop on a dime. But not to worry, you had some of Pennsylvania's finest steel covering that dash, so it was more likely that you weren't going to damage that dash, but your nose and your forehead are going to take a bit of a beating. Yeah, you'll get over it. Don't you worry about it. You might be in a hospital for a month. Not like today, No, 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 no. We were wise in those days. We didn't kick anyone out of hospital. We were smart. We kept them in hospital where we discovered that we were able to stretch out illness longer by keeping people on. Give me those days anytime. Oh, antibiotics? All we needed was penicillin in those days, don't you know? Well, if you want to dumb it all down, everything was better yesterday. Truth is, when we were 15 and 16 and 20 and 25, everything was in front of us. Everything was in front of us. And what happens as we get older is the perspective, simply the perspective changes. We've looked at the beauty of existence around us in a different way. to look at it reluctantly, yeah, you have it. The poets have been very generous with us in explaining how we do that and why. There is a bittersweetness to it, isn't there? But to seriously compare that to something that's better in the past, I don't know what you would use to measure it other than, you know, a bit of bluster and a bit of... The things in the past are always with us. Always. They never change. Kodak Brownie camera any day. I didn't mind the inconvenience at all because at the time it was considered a marvel. We can marvel at everything today, brethren. We can look at the world every morning with wonder. We can look at the sunrise with the same amazement that captured the imagination of our ancient ancestors. Or we can smugly button it down and say it doesn't matter. It's not purposeful. The complexity of our cultures has changed. The rules of culture and expectations that defined a Roman citizen or a Greek citizen or a Persian are different today. We have fought valiantly for choice. Now, look at the big scheme of things. Remember, we've lived through periods where eugenics was seriously considered because we really weren't sure. It was sort of it's always novelty, but we weren't sure. Well, it's okay as long as you're not killing off my kind. You know, kill off older people or kill off younger people, or kill off people by some discriminatory criteria that makes sure that I maintain privilege, intellectual privilege, wealth, you know. Then we realize these things are, they're a corruption of a sense of freedom. And that meant we had to justify that in some ways. And we can't always justify everything that goes on around us. Truman deciding to drop atomic bombs isn't an affront to anybody's sense of humanity. And now the irony is watching those celebrations of the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people instantly on the claim that it shortened battle. What a price we pay, another Pyrrhic victory. Here, stay with me a little bit. I'm caught up. Today is the day that I was born. It's the day that I begin this curious process of measuring time, like everybody does, I think. Not everybody. I don't know what time is. But I'm measuring it in something in this Georgian calendar, with a Georgian calendar. It's so that days are defined into, and weeks are defined in months, and years and decades, and centuries, millennia. It gives us a sense of again, perspective on what's happened around us. Do we want to think now, if we talk about the Ice Age 9,000 years ago, you know, well, that seems it's for when we're young men. In the course of my life, I'm not even 70. And to be thinking about something in 9,000 years, well, that sounds like it was pretty recent, doesn't it? Oh, well... We're sitting on a very young patch of the globe. Well, young for us. We're in a nation that is now revealing what's been underneath the rock. We've done some very, very nasty things to some very, very unwilling people. We have defined our cultural shame. Maybe that's the inescapable trait of a nation growing. Will we learn from it, from our deeds? Yeah, we do. It's inescapable. But we have to move. We know that as we move forward, these moments are still defining us. And the relativity of masonry and all of that is what we want to talk about here today. I'm looking at very bleak, grim weather. A couple of my dearest friends are climbing over the Munros of Scotland right now. For the past 2 or 3 weeks, learning how that, that when the wind finds that mist and drives it, and it's like little icy darts that are hitting you. Well, they're finding that that's fall. That's a good time to be marching around on the moors, and maybe that's what makes the camaraderie and the feeling of good cheer so much more poignant when you step in next to the hearth and somebody hands you a pint and you can sit. Unless you manage to drink yourself to the edge of good health and the pint is just something. In those moments, it doesn't matter. I want to talk today with you and ask you some questions. Our musical accompaniment will have a theme to it, and I'll just expect you to puzzle yourself a little bit and see if you can't come up with it. But I do need your help again. I never quite have all of the good answers that you do. But this is the encouragement to begin to develop your own thought, not something half-arsed, but something that has a sense of purpose and a sense of merit that reflects insight, that reflects the mason, that reflects the principles of masonry do have value because they've worked on the likes of you and me. And we always have to be mindful that when we're together, we can look like silly old men. That's the hardest thing that we face, the harshest judgment that time brings to us, is if we allow ourselves to be mocked. All that pomp and circumstance seems to fall apart when the king is being mocked. And wasn't it a tailor's apprentice who said, but he's not wearing any clothes? Well, the tailor wanted him to be quiet because he was saying to the king, he had convinced the king that he was making him clothes of such fine weave that they wouldn't even capture light. They were so delicate and light, you couldn't feel them on your skin. And so, little lesson taught, eh? Here, question. Where the light is brightest, the shadows are deepest. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. In his day, Goethe's thoughts about the work of that other genius, Isaac Newton, he thought about it, and it made him angry. Now, here's where we look over the shoulder into the minds, into the materials of genius. He was angry. It was because of the assumptions that were suggested by Newton. Never thought of it that way. particularly the conviction that this was the defining absolute science. In a way, this was saying that there was no other plan B. Gotte made this clearer for us by saying Newton's work denied shadows power. In a sense, the light was Newton. He went on to illustrate this in a story of a giant with no power, whose shadow had great power. The giant was Newton, of course. It would be immodest of me to suggest it was genius reacting to genius, so read it for yourself and decide. Genius often reveals what we understand without knowing how we know it. It's always like the brilliant answer is self-evident after it's spoken. Similarly, do we know how radical ideas created Freemasonry? We know the Hiram allegory was the product of careful observation and contemplation. From a time when quoting the ideas of someone else was more highly valued than original thought. Oh, yes, that's part of the good history. I say good, puzzled. Yes, you would be praised. There would be applause if you presented an article that was quoting someone else. That meant you must know something. Oh, times have changed. We know the foundation of thought came well before governance and organization within Freemasonry. We know this. Can trace that back. I had a lovely man years ago ask me if I thought that Freemasonry was connected with the ancient Egyptians. And I, at the time, wanting to fit in like a good thing, I said, yeah, I can see that. You can make that argument. But if you're trained or taught or allow yourself to be trained to make an argument to the art of persuasion, it doesn't necessarily mean that you subscribe to the point of view that you're taking. It means that you have learned the art of persuasion. It used to be taught in the universities. Sure. But it's was Freemasonry then based on radical ideas? Do we know how those radical ideas created? That was if the cauldron was full of radical ideas, how Freemasonry? We know the foundation of thought came before the structure of meetings. We're going to meet every week at this time, or we're going to meet at the second day following the full moon. Well, all right, there's no structure. You and I are going to sit down and we'll meet next time over at a coffee shop. Oh, yeah. The poor man's, the Penny University, as they were called, in the coffee shop. That doesn't mean we have rules and protocols and terms of reference. No. We're at the meeting because there's common purpose and common benefit. We arrive at some benefit from the connection. So before all of the beautiful systems that we have around, before these lavish, remarkable buildings, statements of purpose, statements of creativity and mystery, there was Freemasonry. Not in the sense of putting a chimpanzee in front of a typewriter and saying if he hits the keys long enough, he'll write a Shakespearean play. We're not talking about the randomness of numbers. We're not talking about whether you're a one or a zero as a binary being. We're talking about those things that require that extra element in order to understand. We're talking about imagination. We also know that it reflects, does Freemasonry, the stages of cultural and intellectual change. History teaches us about the Age of Enlightenment, the Reformation, the Renaissance. We, as we study Freemasonry, begin to understand in time past when orthodoxy was a matter of life or death. In some ways, some men grasp that seriousness even today. It was best in times past for men to keep liberal thoughts underground. We trace this. We trace it. It was produced by serious thought and had purpose for man. We trace the it. There were always men thinking beyond the control, the reach of church and state. Adherence to church doctrine and swearing fidelity to the king was a sensible way to live. It took us many generations to carry on the right to probe darkness. Where the light is brightest, the shadows are deepest. Something to think about from one of the most foremost German philosophers. Here's a little piece about that will have you tapping your toe. Canadian, let's do a little search and see if Stan Rogers was a Freemason. Their beauty is in the music and the fact that it's that muscular music sung by sailors. This is a song about the Mary Ellen Carter. He had a maritimer, he had a love affair with ships. Be right back.
Last October in a pouring driving rain, the skipper he'd been drinking and the mate he felt no pain. Too close to Three Mile Rock and she was dealt her mortal blow, and the Mary Ellen Carter settled low. There was just us five aboard her when she finally was awash. We'd worked like hell to save her, all heedless of the cost. And the groan she gave as she went down, it caused us to proclaim that the Mary Ellen Carter would rise again. Well, the owners rode her off, not a nickel was to spend. She gave 20 years of service, boys, that never sorry end. But insurance paid the loss to us, so let her rest below. Then they laughed at us and said we had to go. But we talked of her all winter, some days around the clock. She's worth a quarter million, afloat and at the dock. And with every jar that hit the bar, we swore we would remain and make the Mary Ellen Carter rise again. By a friend. Three dimes a day in a hard hat suit, and twice I've had the bends. Thank God it's only 60 feet, and the currents here are slow, or I'd never have the strength to go below.
but we patched the rent. Stopped the rent, dog patching for gold down. Put cables to her for an ass and girded her around. Tomorrow noon we hit the air and take up the strain and make the merry alert hard to rise again. Rise again, rise again. Never name not be lost to the knowledge. All those who love your best. There, you see, to crumble into scale. She'd saved our lives so many times, living through the gale. And the laughing drunken rats who left her to a sorry grave, they won't be laughing in another day. And you, to whom adversity has dealt the final blow, with passing bastards flying to you everywhere you go, turn to and put out all your strength of arm and heart and brain.
Goodness. You know, he talks about things about the people working the decks and the helm of these sailing ships. And the, if you listen carefully, he's talking about, as he said, the lying bastards. Nobody wanted to assume responsibility. The maritime law was a little flexible, if you want to put it that way, about the responsibility of ship owners for the safety of their crews. And a lot of good men drowned in ships that put off with minimal expense to repair and simply maximizing profit at the expense of men's lives. Today we wouldn't even think about this being a man's world, would we? Absolutely not. We have a different language that we use today because of implications. Different groups have causes and issues. You know, we're trying to find, we're realizing how we can contribute to a different level of balance that will benefit us all culturally. But the work, why underground? Go back and think about it. Subterfuge? We lived as in Masonic principles because rank had privilege. And in many of the places in the world where Freemasonry took root in Holland and Germany and Scotland and Ireland and Spain and England, the Caribbean. So the root required the being carried forward with a connection to the power of the day. Social rank was much more, still with us, but it was defined differently in the day. These were the organization came along after the mercantile class had, according to the aristocracy, intruded into the true blue blood. We now had people of enormous wealth who could display that, not because of bloodline, but because of ambition, fortitude, a risk, an ability to see opportunity. So they, over the centuries, we now have given great legitimacy to that group. We aren't the blue bloods. That connection around the world still exists, but it's a different force today than it was in the days of our ancients, just as the influence of the church is different today than it was then. This is not necessarily easier, because men will feel challenged having to make these choices. We take responsibility, and it rests on the sense of the rights of the individual in that culture, and how that culture protects the most vulnerable, defines the greatness of the culture. Going underground, being underground, meant that we were the open secret. As long as we curried favor with rank, as long as we could use our personal connections. But when that changed, when for example, when the Catholic Queen came into power, when William and Mary came in from with that strong Protestantism from Holland, you know, the rules changed. And the courtiers scrambled to find and redefine those rules. And that obsequious group that bowed and scraped and applauded and with everything that went on. It has great appeal. It just strokes the ego to those who don't have much perspective. But we never lost. There's that sense of excitement about and mystery that defines us. We're different because, oh, we can't talk about that. Well, intellectually, it defines, it tells more about us to have that need for to work in the shadows. And any thoughtful Freemason will be able to engage the critic and comfort them to know that what we're talking about is a perspective. It's not with malevolence in mind. It is part of an evolution, our evolution as an organization, that we find operating and functioning outside of that sense that needs to be examined. Like this. Right now I'm big on maples and oaks. We never ask ourselves why an oak, or what is it that makes that plant a tree and makes it an oak tree. Because we can say a tree is a tree is a tree. So we don't ask those questions. We look at it and say, we recognize this, the taxonomy. Yeah, it's a tree. It's an oak. Yeah, it's a red oak or a white oak, but it's an oak. And is that better than a maple? Well, it's like, really? How are you going to apply it? Maybe for the rudder post for a sailing ship or for a brigantine? Yeah, you know, we'd like an oak. But today, walking around thinking, well, you know, maybe I want an oak cabinet rather than a red maple cabinet. But, you know, day by day, we don't find ourselves lost in debate about the better of one of the or the other. I don't think so. It's like, so what? Get on with it. You want to trouble yourself with this type of thing? Life must be pretty good. Freemasons decided a long time ago that life was harsh, and that if there were ways to bring about a sense of fairness, to improve the quality of life, not only for ourselves, but by doing it for the general good, we were actually creating a better life for ourselves, that we were going to do it. And we found a very amazingly clever way to do that without challenging church or state. It was like, why an oak? Why a church? Well, a church is a church. Why a king? Well, a king does what a king does. And we're no threat, you know, because we have nothing to do with it. We're not going to say anything that's going to affect the predominance of the king, the role of the king. A king is all powerful. Well, we realize that power can be useful and needed to be massaged and needed time and needed patience in order to change. What we always understood is that change is inevitable. It's unstoppable. Now, do you and I believe that? Well, let's not sound like silly old silver-haired prats then, huh? It's essential that we embrace this principle that has been with us for hundreds of years. Probably, I'm guessing, 500 to 700 years. Change is inevitable. And can we influence that? If we can, for the betterment of humanity, then that's a very important responsibility. The underground, the Masonic underground, if it is out there, for people that may be tuning in thinking that this is quite a surreptitious conversation here, and I think that it's around your neighborhood more than mine. It's those conversations that you want to have with your close and dearest and most trusted friends out of earshot. That's what you're really talking about. Is that wrong or right? Well, if it's wrong or right for you, then fine, you know. But that's really what we're talking about here. And I've got to quit screwing around with the keyboard while I'm talking to you. We still take advantage of the underground, and I want you to also think, as long as we're doing this and we're in the company of serious-minded men, ask ourselves the question about what the underground has to do with the esoteric and occult nature of Freemasonry. And if you get over, if we begin to study this, we begin to feel that the rules that we've been taught and the intellectual rules need to change in order to understand the alchemy, for example. Why that need? Well, there was no reason not to. We still have those doubtful intellectual ideas around us. But we're now in an age of information and science, communication, evidence. And the evidence doesn't necessarily give us answers to everything. But we know that it's far more predictable than than superstition. By using terms like superstition, we're not pointing fingers. We're not accusing. We're not confronting, because that's not necessary. What we can do is encourage examination, thoughtful debate, and what we leave behind us as we train the entered apprentice are men who are able to examine ideas from more than one perspective, to be able to argue in your own mind the merit of something that you find objectionable helps us to have a firmer understanding. Let's say we're talking about Wagner, yeah? And we often find that we just toss that aside because Hitler liked Wagner. But we don't, most of us don't know what Wagner was trying to do. What he did, in fact, he wasn't writing music that we would listen to experience emotion. He was writing the emotion. Again, just a simple example over time. Now, some of us have difficulty listening because of the association with a very unpleasant event. It's too new. It's too new. It's just the association with something that should never have happened in the first place. In the war I'm talking about. I want you to listen to Stan's son. You know, Stan died, 1983? This is his boy, Nathan. And he's singing one of Stan's songs. He's singing Genie C. So just give a listen to the father and the son and see if you can hear the father here.
Come, all you lads, draw near to me. That I be not forsaken. This day was lost,
goes on. I want you to hear a little bit about some of the ideas. This is a piece on from written by Thomas Paine. Now, I know Thomas Paine from a book that a very dear friend gave me about the crossing of the Delaware and the story of Washington's valiant efforts and how precarious the victories actually were. And this was the book explains how includes some conversations between Washington and Paine. Paine wanted to was a pamphleteer, a writer, and he wanted to fight He wanted to pick up a musket and join the ranks. The men, farmers, and had been following Washington, and through winters, very awful conditions, in great danger, starvation, cold, poorly clothed, many of them without even a pair of boots. And the story is about their time crossing in the winters, in the snow, the harsh conditions. And Payne said, I'll be there with you, General. And Washington, very seriously and very clearly, said to him, no, we need you to write, because we need the people to understand what is going on. It's more important for the people of the nation he was talking about was to become the United States. It was more important that they, this story, the message, be revealed to them. And there was only one person that could do that. And that, in fact, Thomas Paine was that important to the cause. And of course, Paine followed the instruction and urgings of the of Washington. This is about the Age of Reason. Just a little taste of it for you.
The Age of Reason, part the first, being an investigation of true and fabulous theology by Thomas Paine. London, printed and published by R. Carlyle, 55 Fleet Street, 1819. The Age of Reason, part the first. It has been my intention for several years past to publish my thoughts upon religion. I am well aware of the difficulties that attend the subject, and from the consideration had reserved it to a more advanced period of life. I intended it to be the last offering I should make to my fellow citizens of all nations, and that a time when the purity of the motive that induced me to do it could not admit of a question, even by those who might disapprove the work. The circumstance that has now taken place in France of the total abolition of the whole national order of priesthood and of everything appertaining to compulsive systems of religion and compulsive articles of faith has not only precipitated my intention, but rendered a work of this kind exceedingly necessary, lest in the general wreck of superstition, of false systems of government and false theology, we lose sight of morality, of humanity, and of the theology that is true. As several of my colleagues and others of my fellow citizens of France have given me the example of making their voluntary and individual profession of faith, I also will make mine, and I do this with all that sincerity and frankness with which the mind of man communicates with itself. I believe in one God and no more, and I hope for happiness beyond this life. I believe the equality of man, and I believe that religious duties consist in doing justice, loving mercy, and endeavoring to make our fellow creatures happy. But lest it should be supposed that I believe in many other things in addition to these, I shall, in the progress of this work, declare the things I do not believe, and my reasons for not believing them. I do not believe in the creed professed by the Jewish Church, by the Roman Church, by the Greek Church, by the Turkish Church, by the Protestant Church, nor by any church that I know of. My own mind is my own church. All national institutions of churches, whether Jewish, Christian, or Turkish, appear to me no other than human inventions, set up to terrify and enslave mankind and monopolize power and profit. I do not mean by this declaration to condemn those who believe otherwise. They have the same right to their belief as I have to mine. But it is necessary to the happiness of man that he be mentally faithful to himself. Infidelity does not consist in believing or in disbelieving. It consists in professing to believe what he does not believe. It is impossible to calculate the moral mischief, if I may so express it, that mental lying has produced in society. When a man has so far corrupted and prostituted the chastity of his mind as to subscribe his professional belief to things he does not believe, he has prepared himself for the commission of every other crime. He takes up the trade of a priest for the sake of gain, and in order to qualify himself for that trade, he begins with a perjury. Can we conceive anything more destructive to morality than this? Soon after I had published the pamphlet Common Sense in America, I saw the exceeding probability that a revolution in the system of government would be followed by a revolution in the system of religion. The adulterous connection of church and state, wherever it had taken place, whether Jewish, Christian, or Turkish, had so effectually prohibited by pains and penalties every discussion upon established creeds or upon first principles of religion, that until the system of government should be changed, those subjects could not be brought fairly and openly before the world, but that whenever this should be done, a revolution in the system of religion would follow. Human inventions and priestcraft would be detected, and man would return to the pure, unmixed, and unadulterated belief of one God and no more. Every national church or religion has established itself by pretending some special mission from God, communicated to certain individuals. The Jews have their Moses, the Christians their Jesus Christ, their apostles and saints, the Turks their Muhammad, as if the way to God was not open to every man alike. Each of those churches show certain books, which they call revelation, or the word of God. The Jews say that their word of God was given by God to Moses, face to face. The Christians say that their word of God came by divine inspiration. And the Turks say that their word of God, the Quran, was brought by an angel from heaven. Each of those churches accuse the other of unbelief. And for my own part, I disbelieve them all. As it is necessary to affix right ideas to words, I will, before I proceed further into the subject, offer some other observations on the word revelation.
Thomas Paine. You can see the movement that was occurring in the mind of people, and this position that the church is in your mind, just as we've often said here on Masonic Effects, that Freemasonry is you. Freemasonry is in the mind. There's a change in the air. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll come back to Thomas Paine, don't you worry. Thank you very much for tuning in today. It's been an absolute pleasure. We have Thanksgiving coming up. Yeah, national holiday in Canada. Before I see you next, I'd like you to search out the roots of Thanksgiving. You'll find that it has nothing to do with the Americans. Like a lot of things, things were borrowed, things were plagiarized. Walk around chewing on that little nub that Paine gave us today. That he was really talking about something that my grandfather Cyril would call hypocrisy. The infidelity is the man who says he believes one thing but really doesn't. And then I might say to Paine, if he was here, and I wish he was, who amongst us knows his true nature? Who amongst us can reveal that? I look forward to seeing you and having you with us again. Thank you very much for joining Masonic Effects. Remember, the world has found a way to speak. We can now listen And as we move forward as Freemasons, let's see how, if we can challenge those people that clamor to compete, collecting experiences by offering up a deeper meaning, a deeper purpose to move through this world, improving, committing to the improvement of mankind, people around us, and doing it with as light an ecological footprint as we possibly can. We don't need to be treading so hard on this earth that we visit for a very, very short period of time. Let's be light and let's be gentle. See you soon.
They dragged her down dead from Dover morning, too cheap to spare her one last head of steam. Deep in diesel fume and grease, dust and soot on the face of one who was so clean. They brought me here to watch her in the boneyard, just two old wrecks to spend the night alone. This evil place, clouds on the moon, hide her disgrace. This whiskey hides my own. It's the last watch on the Midland, the last watch alone.
Oh,
love.